The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again, and I would like to remind you again that you should not run off and try any strategies that we might talk about on the air, such as a Roth conversion or a self-directed 401 trust and or assorted other possible strategies involving real estate, taxation, private partnership, investing and formation, retirement plan strategies and execution, and assorted other strategies that we may discuss and or tax topics. What I recommend always, whether it's my show or other shows, is don't just assume. Go ask your current advisors if they have an opinion, because they're familiar with your facts and circumstances. I am likely not, unless you're already a client of our firm. For those of you that don't have advisors and might want to consider becoming a client, especially if you need help with the aforementioned areas, including a review of private placement memorandums for some of the real estate syndications that you may be familiar with, or perhaps you're contemplating joining one of the investor slash mentor programs where you would run into those opportunities and you don't feel comfortable or competent to analyze the myriad of documents that you'll have placed in front of you. Because if you don't know how those entities function, you may be in for some surprises as you go down that path. We do like generally we like that area of investing, but as with any area, there's good news, bad news, there's good apples, bad apples, there's rational terms, there's irrational terms, and if you don't understand where the soft spots are, it's easy to turn around later and wonder what happened. That can happen regardless of whether you understood or not. The market has a way of overriding a lot of your good intentions, and you know, if we have another period like we went through 2 years ago with 11 rate changes, that's interest rate changes, you know, that's a tough conundrum to surmount. But in any event, we have no doubt seen that cycle. We'll no doubt see it again at some point, and hopefully we can get better with each and every cycle we go through. You know, I was listening to some of the news earlier today, and of course, you know, there's been a lot happen the last couple days with regard to Mr. Elon Musk and Mr. Trump. Apparently, they've butted heads, and they're on the outs. And I'm going to remind you, Mr. Trump has been known to give three chances to people that he has felt like have disrespected him or otherwise mistreated him. I actually heard him say it once on the air that you know, he always will allow, or in most cases, I guess I shouldn't say always, a second chance. Sure, he'll give people a second chance. I can think of various scoundrels that have come through his administrations. And, you know, Anthony Scaramucci would be one that I can think of. And I don't know if he's going to get a third chance. But anyway, Mr. Trump, it wasn't when he was discussing that personality per se, but I can't remember who it was. He said, well, I give anybody a second chance. I might even give you a third chance, but I'm not going to give you a fourth chance. So he does have his limits. And I would be somewhat surprised if he and Musk don't find a way to iron out their differences. I mean, unfortunately, you've got a couple of personalities there that, as awesome as they are, each in their own right, they don't like admitting they made a mistake, or they don't like not getting credit for something they feel entitled to. And I guess in Mr. Musk's case, he made the comment that Trump would not have won Pennsylvania, ergo the House. The Republicans would not have won the House. There'd be a Democratic administration. There'd be a Democratic Congress. And isn't that a horrible thing? And yeah, I would say he's absolutely right on the last point there. I'm not so sure that Mr. Trump would not have won. It might have been closer. But when you look at the incredible shift by voting district across the country, I'm not so sure, you know, it was just Mr. Musk coming on board, because remember, Musk was a Democratic supporter, so it's not like he brought a lot of votes with him. Now, he did bring a lot of money with him, and he did put a lot of money into the Trump campaign coffers, so I can understand why he feels the way he does. On the other hand, if I'm President Trump, you know, I'm going to at some point say, hey, you know, I was already in that race before you showed up. I was already leading in most of the polls and tight in all the battleground states. So I can see where he kind of feels like, well, you know, we were glad to have your support, Mr. Musk, but, you know, I'm not going to say that you were the reason we won. And so, I don't know. I've already read or saw on the news that Musk is reaching out to some of the folks in the administration trying to find out the best way he can approach putting a Band-Aid back on that relationship. In any event, you know, what Musk is complaining about in part is, you know, how in spite of all the talk that we're going to cut spending, the latest big, beautiful bill that's now in the hands of the Senate to kick around, and then at some point it'll be synced up between the House version and whatever the Senate comes up with. But there's more than a couple Republican senators, I think Senator Johnson from Wisconsin and Thune, the leader of the Senate, are saying, you know, there's some things that are probably not going to be able to be passed in their current form. But the biggest issue, and today's a good day to be trolling the news channels. Fox Business has had some good stuff today, and there was a segment with Larry Kudlow. I guess it's his show he's got on every day, where he talked about how that he thinks Musk is suffering a little bit from the being a newbie to the political process. And I can't remember exactly the point he made, but the gist of it was, look, what's been passed is there to be changed and will be changed. Don't think it's in its final form. And there's a technical term. I'm not sure. It may have been appropriation. It was part of the process of getting a framework to where it's actually got funds behind it and will see certain spending actually occur, or certain cuts. And he said that once Musk understands what's really going to happen, they're not that far off from where Musk was hoping to be with cuts. And, you know, I would say Trump was much the same as Musk back during his first administration. I don't think he fully understood how the process works. And I think we're a lot closer, perhaps, than, I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to be a lot closer than maybe it looks right now. So let's hope we get cooperation from both sides, because both parties are vital to our success with this current budgetary cycle and, you know, government spending in general. I'll say this, of all the people not in government that have just recently been in government, Mr. Musk has his hands around, to a certain extent, the necessary budgetary amounts that have to happen in terms of cuts. I mean, he absolutely understands we're spending $7 trillion a year. We're collecting $5 trillion. We cannot go on indefinitely with that $2 trillion a year deficit. And I'll tell you another gentleman that understands this, and he has been part of government, thank goodness. He's the only, I'm going to say he's the only congressman that actually really truly gets it and has gotten it for quite some time now. And you've heard me discuss him here on the show. In fact, I've got some videos out on the video page of our BeAPlannerShow.com site. And I've got another one that I've loaded up, but I haven't prettied it up enough to publish it. But it came out, let's see, today is the 6th, so it was on YouTube a day ago or 2 days ago. And he delivered, the title of the post is On the House Floor, Representative David Swikert. And for those of you that want to look him up, it's S-C-H-W-E-I-K-E-R-T. Just put Arizona Republican Swikert, spell it any way you want. You're going to get a hit on this speech, I'm sure, on YouTube. And as the title says, he delivered an epic speech about debt and deficits and tough answers. And Swikert tries to say between the stripes, between the progressives and the conservatives, and he points out the fallacies of both, the lies, you might say, he calls them lies, that you hear on both sides of the aisle as to what our budget consists of, what's being cut, what's not being cut, what's being threatened for delivery. In other words, you know, we're upending all the old people, you know, with some of the cuts that are proposed. Of course, it's all, you know, fear mongering, basically. And, you know, as he points out, he said, look, my brothers and sisters on both sides of the aisle, you can play this politics angle if you want. The reality is, when the money runs out, we're all Americans. We're not Democrat, we're not Republican, and it's the math that we're arguing about. It's not whether we're going to go bust. We are going to go bust, and we're going bust faster than we can imagine. And he delivers some of the math that's really amazing. And we're going to talk about this probably over a couple shows. I need to get the video out there. I want to do a summary of it as well. And just a couple of key points. You know, he talks about our entitlements that we, or the money we spend by age group, just generally. And he said that, you know, if you back up to, I think, the 60s, maybe 60s or 70s, we spent $7 on the young in our society, kids, you know, children and I guess young adults, and we spend $1 on the elderly. He says, look, our problem is demographics. That's the math that's way out of whack now compared to the, quote, good old days. He said, now we're spending $7 on the elderly to every $1 for the youth. And that's striking because that number is not going to subside for a while. And, you know, he pointed out that the $2 trillion deficit, I don't want to get the math wrong, but suffice to say, and I will get this summarized for you, we'll put it on the site. Suffice it to say that our annual deficit will scale to as much as $10 trillion, depending on your assumption set, as we get out to, I believe it was 2035 or so, some, you know, 10, 15-year out view. And part of the problem is, again, the elderly, that number will continue to skyrocket. Just, I mean, one measure alone, Medicare, it's an extra 10,800 people, I believe is the number. It was either 10,000 or 12,800 last time I checked. I believe it's 10. Come onto the Medicare rolls every day. Think about that. And think about the cost of medical care, where it's been, where it is now, and where it's headed. Do you think it's going down? Just curious. I don't think so. And, you know, when you look at the way that we can pay for it, there's not a whole lot of options. And that's what Swikert points out. You know, there's, now he's got some ideas. In fact, he talks about a bill that he's, I think, just put out that would save us, it's like $1.78 trillion without, doesn't sound like without much pain at all. And I didn't take notes yet because I wanted to get past this week and then I'll have some time to summarize the video. But, you know, there are some common sense solutions, but they all involve a systematic change in our nation's policies as to what we're going to prioritize when it comes to spending. And the big, you know, bogey in the room, if you will, is the demographics, the age of our population. And it's a direct hit. We are borrowing, just so you know, we're borrowing $6 billion a day at the moment. And we'll be up to $10 billion, I believe is the number, $10 billion a day by, I believe it's in 10 years. So 2000, what would that be, 2035? It's amazing. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com. That's nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about the deficit and the increased or expanded deficits that appear will occur if the one big, beautiful tax bill gets passed here in the near term by the Congress. It's already passed the House. The Senate's already making noises and threats that it will not pass the Senate in its current form. And so it'll be interesting to see who wields the power to change the outcome of that whole process. And of course, it's being undertaken and with a trick way to pass with, you know, the budget reconciliation tool, where it's funny, or it's not funny, but it's crazy how that's become a normal tool. It used to be an exception to the rule. Now it's, you know, as tight as the Congress respective Democrat and Republican vote tallies are, it's become more necessary. One of the issues that is going to weigh heavy on the American public is that a deficit-financed reconciliation bill, meaning one that adds significant debt to the, or deficits, cumulative deficits to the tally we already have, is expected to raise Americans' mortgage costs by thousands of dollars per year by pushing up interest rates. And, you know, that's part of the problem when we're spending at the levels we are. It's the debt that we're borrowing. You know, there's not an infinite amount of savings in the overall economy. And if you think about every time we borrow $1 trillion, theoretically, there's $1 trillion less that could go into investment in, you know, the economy, be it new factories, be it, almost anything, whether it's educational endeavors, healthcare. You know, there is a finite amount of money. Now, can we print more? Yeah, we can. And that exacerbates the problem. Then we get into an inflationary period. And unless you believe in the modern monetary policy belief, which I don't, there's never really been any trial run of that at a large scale, but even on a small scale, it created inflationary outcomes. But in any event, if you believe the economists that have opined already on this bill, let's see, this article, well, this is the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I got this article off their website, and they're, you know, a bipartisan group, but, you know, they've been wrong, so I won't say they're the Bible. But anyway, they say that the current One Big Beautiful Bill Act, that's OBBA, O-B-B-B-A, would add about $5 trillion to the debt over 10 years if its provisions are made permanent, while the fiscal year 2025 concurrent budget resolution allows the Senate to take that bill and enact up to $5.8 trillion of primary borrowing through 2034. Not only would this borrowing eventually shrink the economy and potentially reduce after-tax income, it would also push up interest rates on mortgages, auto loans, and business loans. Not a good outcome. And a lot of our measuring sticks, the numbers start looking peaked if that were to happen. The CFRB estimates that a bill that adds $5.8 trillion to primary deficits would raise the debt to GDP ratio by 17 percentage points by 2034 and approximately 63 percentage points by 2055. And as a result, it would raise interest rates by 34 basis points on consumer debt, so that would be 0.34%, including student loans, mortgage loans, and other forms of debt by 2034. It would raise those interest rates by 126 basis points, so that's 1.26% by 2055. Would boost the average annual mortgage payment by $1,450 by 2034 and the equivalent of $5,500 by 2055. Compare that to an average tax cut of $1,550 from a bill resembling the Senate budget reconciliation instructions in 2034 and $2,450 per person in 2055. So there's a little bit of a gap there, at least on the 2055 side of that equation. It would be expected, and this is a big number, it would be expected to boost the lifetime cost of the average mortgage by $44,000 in 2034 and the equivalent of $250,000 in 2055, adding 3 to 13% to the cost of a typical mortgage. I know 2055 is a long way out. That's 30 years, obviously. But if you go back 30 years, let's see, that would put us in the 80s, or let's see, early 90s, or I had it right the first time, put us in the late 80s, I believe, but irrespective, $250,000 higher mortgage, were we $250,000 less than where we are today, if we back up to the 80s? I don't think we were. It's hard for me to relate to numbers like that. I know, you know, in 1985, I bought a house, or I was part of two other guys and myself, high school and college roommate types or, you know, friends, we bought a house that was like $120,000 to, you know, 4-bedroom, 2-bath. It was the typical custom home out in Spring. And that was like, I think we assumed a loan. It was when the first real estate debacle occurred, at least in our lifetime. And we thought we had stuck a fat hog when we got that property for, I believe it was like $114,000, $115,000. We took over a mortgage. And I don't think that same house today would be going for, what, $370,000 or so? That's hard to fathom. So, you know, and I know there's a lot of other components that go into getting these prices to that level, but the cost of money is not to be discounted, pardon the pun. Higher debt means costlier mortgages. When the government debt increases, the cost that bondholders charge the government to hold the debt, i.e. the interest rate, increases as well, as we have seen in the bond market recently. Interest rates on government debt flow to interest rates throughout the economy. So interest rates on government debt flow through to interest rates throughout the economy. And, you know, the point that Representative Schweikert makes in that video is, and you know, once you understand this connection, he makes the point, do we really want the bond market to be running our country? Because that's what's going to happen if we proceed down the path that we're on. And it probably has already started, I'm pretty sure, if you look back in time. And it just reverberates. I mean, you look at the impact on the multifamily market with those 11 rate clicks or increase, 11 rate increases on the Fed funds, you know, at the Federal Reserve that occurred in 2020, what, 22 and 23, and the impact that it made on multifamily, the cost of building, the cost of purchasing, and the impact on selling, because the buyers had to sustain the same interest rates that everybody else had. So, you know, it wasn't, the seller wasn't just in a vacuum. I mean, even if they had paid a property off, which of course none of them had, that's not how we make money in multifamily, the buyer still had to find debt. So it became a challenge for the seller to find a buyer that could qualify for the new debt, higher interest rate, the lower TVs that the lenders were offering the buyer. It all reverberated back to affect everybody in the market. Moving on with the article here, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that every 1 percentage point increase in the government's debt to GDP, which, by the way, we're currently sitting at about 100. Well, again, it depends on which economist you're going to say has the right variables in their constraints where they calculate this stuff. But we're sitting somewhere in the 130 to 150, 130 to 150% of GDP as the current ratio. But every 1 percentage point in that ratio boosts interest rates by 2 basis points. So that's 0.02 of 1 percentage point. Some estimates are even higher. Scholars at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas find that each percentage point increase in debt to GDP boosts interest rates by 3 basis points. And scholars at the American Enterprise Institute find each percent of GDP in debt boosts rates by 4.5 basis points. So that's 0.045 of 1 percentage point. Increasing primary borrowing by $5.8 trillion through 2034 as allowed under the Senate reconciliation instructions, would boost debt by 17% of GDP once interest is included. That's a big hike in less than 10 years. 17% once interest is included, up to 134% of GDP. Okay, so this particular set of economic forecasts has us at, what, 117%, I guess, if these changes would boost it by 17% up to the new level of 134. It's at least 117. I've seen some economists that say it's already at 250. I mean, at 150 now. So it depends on who you want to suggest has their hands around these variables the best. A CBO, that's Congressional Budget Office, illustration of an extrapolated version of the Senate instructions would boost debt by 63% of GDP by 2055 to 220%. I know 2055 sounds like it's a long way out. Many of us probably won't be here, myself included, at that point. But boy, are our children going to be up against it when that time comes at the rate we're going. But anyway. Let's go ahead and take our last break now, and we'll circle back here in a few minutes with the final part of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
For nearly 150 years, American Humane Society has been a promise and a guiding light in the world of animal welfare. Our commitment to rescuing, caring for, and protecting animals sets a gold standard in care and compassion. As pioneers in the field, we've grown into a global authority, trusted to lead the way in nearly every arena of animal protection. We are the guardians of those who cannot speak for themselves. Join us, and together, we will create a more humane world.
Dreams and faded dreams. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And, you know, we've been talking about the gloom and doom associated with our current fiscal mess as a country. It's amazing to me that it's gone on as long as it has. You know, getting increasingly worse throughout our lifetimes. I mean, it's hard to believe the level that we've allowed to accumulate. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of culprits. I don't think anyone in Congress is exempt, in truth. Both sides of the aisle have contributed. And at this point, again, it's going to take more than taxing the wealthy, which is what the Democrats would like to be, or you know, cutting the aid that we provide other countries and things of that nature, which is what the Republicans would suggest as a solution. Both of those things times 10 don't even move the needle. And so, you know, there's gonna have to be some systemic changes to how we spend our money. And, you know, the way we spend it now, as I can tell you, the top four components in our federal budget are Medicare, which I believe is just over $2 trillion. Let me see what our federal debt, our U.S. debt clock shows today. I haven't looked at this in a while, but the current debt, U.S. national debt, and again, this is the part, just looking at the current budgetary cycle, the things we've already committed to for the current cycle. Can't emphasize that enough, because the real number, if you throw on the unfunded mandate, is much higher. But in any event, 36,944,000,000,000. So we're almost at that $37 trillion mark. And if you want to look at the top four categories, so yes, I said Medicare. Well, Medicare and Medicaid combined are about $1.7 trillion. This is of each year's spending, so each year's annual budget. Social Security is about $1.5 trillion. Interest expense on the debt is the third most prolific category now. It's over $1 trillion. Should be about $1.1 trillion by the end of the fiscal year, which is September. And then defense is at $900 billion. So we're actually spending more on interest expense than we are on defense for our nation. That's pretty telling. And if you go down further on that chart, let me see here. There's an unfunded debt calculation. It's another $104 trillion. So if you add the funded to the unfunded, you've got almost 140, well, you're just over $140 trillion. So I said 150 earlier. Again, some economic forecasts show we're already well over the 150 mark, but $104 trillion that we've already committed to. These are things like indexed amounts for assorted budgets and costs like Social Security, Medicare, pensions of, you know, federal employees, health care. I mean, you can just go down the list. These are things that have already been passed into law. It's not like we got to wait to have a vote. Now, we could have a vote to change things, like, you know, the retirement age could change. That could slow a little bit down. It wouldn't make a huge difference. I believe, as I was listening to the David Swikert video I referenced, which I'll get that up on the website over the weekend, hopefully. I believe I heard him say that even if you, and there is some bipartisan agreement on doing this, sadly, if you were to get rid of the ceiling on Social Security on our paychecks, so instead of whatever the number is now, I think it's 160 something, if I remember right. It's sickening to think about it. But in any event, if you said, well, let's treat it like Medicare, where I guess at least for the past, I don't know, it's been 15 years or more, Medicare does not have a ceiling. You calculate the Medicare tax on every dollar of payroll you get, or your employer does on every dollar they pay you. And there's been proposal now for several years that's getting increasingly bipartisan to go ahead and apply the same logic to the Social Security calculation, which again is capped now, let's see, 2025 SSA ceiling. Let's see what that number looks like now. Oh, geez, I need to look at this more often. $176,100 is what gets hit, the max for Social Security to be taken out of a paycheck. $176,000. That is amazing. So, again, there's a movement to say, well, you know, if even if you made $1 million, you need to withhold on it. And I don't know. I'm pretty sure we're going to see it here in the not too distant future, because things are so dreadful. I don't think there's any question that. And again, it's not going to move the needle much at all. And, you know, Swikert, I think, provides some numbers in that video. So, again, I'll keep saying it. I'm going to get the video up there. You could go YouTube it right now if you felt so inclined, but I'll try to get it out there along with a summary of the highlights just so you can glance at it if you don't want to take the 30 minutes to go listen to it. And by the way, it ought to be required viewing for every member of Congress. I mean, to let these people stick their head in the sand and then act like, oh, well, you know, we didn't know, just like the USAID debacle, you know, how many congressmen are saying, oh, we didn't know, or they're not saying anything, which is even more telling, because both parties contributed to that mess. Anyway, so I'm going to circle back to the concept of the taxes. Tax brackets, tax rates are going to go up. I don't care where you think these points of contention on the math go. We're not arguing about whether the math is not in dispute. And again, it's demographic in most cases. So it's, you know, just take the political labels off of it. Just call it old age. It's our old age. It's our number of young wage earners. And, you know, again, both Trump and Musk have that right. We need, as Trump said, I can't remember when, I think it was during the campaign, it's absolutely insane that we educate the brightest, most intelligent students from other countries, and then we send them back, in some cases mandatorily with our visa rules, we send them away from America to go back and work in their own countries. That's insanity. Why don't we do what we can to retain that gold mine of knowledge and keep it in America? And not only does it help get us better products and services, et cetera, it gets us more people paying into the pool to fund the disparity we have with the number of people that are taking from the system now because of the demographics versus those that are paying, you know, the ones that are getting payments out versus those that are paying in. We need to do whatever we have to find more able-bodied workers to pay in. I don't care where they come from, as long as they're not rapists, murderers, gang members, etc. We need them on payrolls in America. That's the only way we're going to turn this train around. But anyway, what else can we do on an individual basis? I hate to harp on it again. I harp on it virtually every week. If you've got pre-tax retirement funds, you've got to understand the Roth option for converting your retirement funds, assuming you qualify, from pre-tax over to Roth so that you can sidestep the oncoming tax train, because it is coming. You know, whether the politicians want to cut your taxes or not, that doesn't change the math on when we run out of money. In fact, it'll make it worse if the other ways to fund the government don't kick in. Like, you know, the tariffs aren't going to be enough to close the gap on our increased deficits, nor would any other option that, you know, has been kicked around. I mean, we can cut $2 trillion here, $1 trillion there, etc. That's not going to get us where we need to be spending-wise. That can stop the increase, but it still doesn't. I mean, we need to reduce the ratio of debt to GDP, like Japan has started to do. They used to be over 300% of debt to GDP. I think they're down now in the 260 range, which is amazing. It's admirable. But, of course, it's still a long way to go. But in any event, you know, we've got a hole that we're in, and we're digging it deeper to the extent we continue to enter into these deficits. And I understand in the current instance with Mr. Trump, he's not just cutting taxes. He's also trying to stimulate the revenue side by monetizing various facets of the government, including some of our oil and gas reserves, selling off some of the buildings in that 14,000 building, unoccupied building portfolio, and then the tariffs. And there's no question those can make significant dents, but in terms of that systemic change, it's going to take more than that. And then you're also going to have to put handcuffs on Congress to not spend the savings, which is what they always have done that. Anyway, well, we're at the end of the show, it sounds like, and I'm glad you could tune in today. We'll be back here on Sunday. I believe we'll be having one of our Cybersecurity Sunday shows if Mr. AI Wynn is available. And that will be right here on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. And join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Ooh.